The Conservatory Audio Catalog, 1-815-220-9147. Marley Stone recording from the main office. The Conservatory's exhibits range from baffling to terrifying to downright comical. Of course, it's all very fascinating from a scientific point of view, but I have to wonder what the point of some of these rooms are. From what I've seen so far, this is a place of preservation. And I don't think there is anything more deserving of that descriptor than this room that I discovered in the Southern Wing a few weeks ago. It was the first exhibit I stopped at, and didn't really pay it any attention. If anything, I wrote it off as something that did not need to be cataloged, or at least not right away. But that changed throughout the days as I had to pass through the area multiple times with my journey through this wing. That room wasn't always the first area I passed through. Sometimes it was the third or sixth exhibit, but the contents remained exactly the same. It houses a small circular table with a bunch of 5 bananas resting on top. The bananas are typical grocery store variety, an added exception being no farm or brand sticker, but nothing else to note. They're not pristine, there are a few tiny brown spots, but the interesting thing about these bananas is that they stay ripe and don't go bad. The first time I noticed that they weren't changing was about 5 days after discovering the room for the first time. Of course, I had passed through multiple times in between, but it hit me then that I was expecting them to become overripe. That's when I started paying attention. After that, I made sure to check the bananas every single day, picking them up and counting the little brown flecks on the peels, but nothing changed after 7 more days. I even made sure to place them back down in the same position to see if a field spot of sorts would form where the bunch was resting on the table, but that also never changed. Since there weren't as many exhibits in this part of the conservatory, I had no reservations about spending an entire day in one room. I no longer really have a sense of time, but from when I woke up in the office to falling asleep on the floor across from the table multiple hours later, I observed no physical changes in the bananas. It has now been at least 19 days with no deterioration. Yesterday, I took a new path that led me through a hallway with the wooden door off to my right, about halfway down. The one I haven't seen in weeks, since it first appeared to me in my attempts to map the conservatory. I still haven't found the key to open it, let alone any key. I've yet to discover something that isn't exactly where it belongs, so no keys. There was something different about the door this time. At first, I thought it was just one of the bees I've seen hanging about, but when I stepped closer to the door, I could hear a faint buzzing sound. It didn't sound organic, like a creature was making it. I thought about using something to try and pick the lock before I remembered I don't have anything that would accomplish that specific task. I'm not about to break a door, or anything else really, in this place just to, what, unveil a piece of the mystery? I still haven't seen all of the exhibits yet. This can wait, until I know for sure that there's no key lying around somewhere. Speaking of buzzing and bees, there's something strange about the colony creatures here. They've got such large populations that shouldn't exist in nature, almost packed together with no room to move around. Sometimes they wander out into the hallway, but most of the time I think they prefer to be close and confined. I don't know how they even move. There's such little space between individuals. One of the rooms contains a colony of bees without a hive. Bees without a hive are nothing new. Over 75% of known bee species are solitary, living in tunnels or small nests. They're typically less defensive without a queen to protect, and I did observe that in this case. I'm calling them sweet bees for now. A play on sweat bees, one of the more solitary bees, and they're also just very cute. They're so docile that I have to be careful entering the area when they're asleep. At any given time, there could be a layer of bees covering the floor, softly purring like cats. Usually the sound bees make is just the rapid beating of their wings, but in sweet bees, even without movement, there's a soft rumble from their little bodies. I wish I had a magnifying glass, or something to allow me a closer look, because I'm pretty sure it's coming from their mouthparts. Outside of the purring and atypical social structure and behavior of hiveless bees, these ones don't act all that different from the bees I've encountered before. When they leave their room, they go to the courtyard to feed and inadvertently pollinate a few things, before returning to the main colony. I have no way of tracking which bees go out and what sort of schedule they're on, but without a queen to reproduce or a hive to maintain, I assume it's every bee for themselves out there. And it's not as if they'll die in the conservatory if they don't get some pollen. Another large colony of creatures to catalog in this wing are the mosquito bats. Far more sinister, I think, than the sweet bees. This is another one of the rare occurrences when a creature, like a bee, does actually eat. I've witnessed the bats fly out in smaller groups to other exhibits, and the courtyard, to bite and drink from the other animals. They're incredibly small, just the size of my thumbnail, and they don't go after the more insect-like creatures. But aside from that, everything seems to be fair game. Being bitten and subsequently having something sucked out doesn't bother the victims of the mosquito bat. I don't think they're doing it to survive. Like the bees going out to pollinate, I think it might just be enjoyable. It begs the question, why doesn't everything else get to have a little snack for fun? Why is it the hematophagous creatures that choose to eat? I'm weirdly on edge around these mosquito bats. It's probably something about that high-pitched whine they make despite having fleshy bat wings. They're not doing any harm, at the very least, I guess. On days where I'm especially missing the outdoors, I go to the courtyard. It's not the same, I know, but there's grass on the ground and trees lining the walls, and I can pretend that the light I see is the sun on a partly cloudy day. When I left home, it was winter. The trees were heavy with ice and snow. Everything was so white you were almost blinded if you stepped outside without sunglasses. I used to think I hated winter, but I find myself missing it these days. As nice as it is to always be warm when I quote-unquote step outside, I miss the fresh air and how that first freezing breath was a shock to the system. These days, if I need a shock, all I have to do is look around. I digress. The courtyard itself is this massive, dome-like structure somewhere to the north of the office. There are a few walking paths cutting through the vegetation that lead in and out, so it's not a central location, but I'm never really all that far from it. There are a few benches along the paths that are actually kind of comfortable. I've taken more than one nap out there. So, I mentioned the animals before. There are some smaller creatures that stay here, not unlike insects and birds, that help pollinate the little flowers and other plants, since I haven't felt any wind. A butterfly with four pairs of wings landed on my shoulder the other day. The birds are a little different. They don't have feathers, and their wings make this awful slapping sound when they take off for a flight that shouldn't be possible, yet somehow is. If it wasn't obvious by now, there are clearly no biological rules for any group of similar creatures here in the conservatory. The ducks with feet from the east wing had feathers and flew just fine, if a little wobbly from the unnatural weight distribution. The slightly less disturbing inhabitants of the courtyard include cattle, cats, and wolves, all with three eyes. They have two eyes in their normal placements, front-facing for the cats and wolves, and on the sides of the head for cattle. There is also a third eye slightly above the center of the paired eyes. It's not parietal, and this isn't a two-headed calf situation. These are mature animals with fully functional third eyes. The cats and wolves are slightly skittish about my testing, but when I got the attention of one of the cattle, it tracked my hand with all three eyes. It does become less unsettling the more time I spend with them. There's this big, fluffy gray cat that's caught my eye a few times. I'm trying to befriend it, but it's kind of difficult to domesticate an animal that isn't food-motivated. Maybe I'll have a look around for something I can turn into a toy. Baby steps. There's a decent-sized grove in one sector of the courtyard. The trees and other shrubs seem bigger and less disturbed. I haven't seen many creatures in this part. They tend to steer clear and spend most of their time in open areas. I guess because this space is already inhabited by something. I was about to walk through the sparse underbrush to investigate some vines growing on the walls leading up to the dome when I noticed a medium-sized lump in the moss and lichen. At first I paid it no mind, thinking it was just a bunch of rocks or a gnarled whorl of roots. But as I stepped closer, the mossy floor started to move towards the lump. The motion was not dissimilar to liquid coagulating. It reminded me of a non-Newtonian fluid spreading after pressure is removed, but in reverse. Tiny flowers grew from the rapidly swelling lump, their petals opening and closing like breathing. It stretched upwards on five leg-like structures, keeping the bulk of its body an amorphous blob. As each leg lifted, the mossy substance broke off and reconnected a few feet away when the leg was set back down. It was walking, and it kept this strange locomotion until it was in the center of the grove, equally far away from me and the edges of the little forested sector. This is one of the exhibits where I cannot tell if it is a plant or animal or hybrid of the two. These types of creatures aren't rare in the conservatory, but they're still the most shocking to me. Give me all the plants with unnatural shapes and colors, all the animals that are hybrids of species I'm already familiar with, and I'll mostly be fine. The featherless, fleshy birds are grotesque. The green ants with long antennae are freaky in their own way, but not to the extent of some of these exhibits. Things like this moss beast are the ones that stay in the back of my mind for days, especially when I don't seek them out again for further observation. I do want to come back to that one, though. As quiet as the grove is, it's peaceful. I can see myself spending more time there as long as I'm not disturbing its occupant. End audio catalog. Supplemental. The exhibits in the South Wing continue to unsettle me from an academic perspective, and this leaves me to speculate about the nature of things in the conservatory. If I try to apply any sort of logic, or use my knowledge of physics, chemistry, biology, nothing adds up. This place doesn't follow the laws of science as I know them, leading me to one of two conclusions. The first is that the conservatory cannot and does not exist on Earth, in the Milky Way galaxy, or even in the known universe. That's a stretch, to say the very least. But the second option might be even more of a stretch. Magic. I'm not talking Harry Potter wands and spells nonsense. I mean, in this day and age, if your idea of magic is based on a kid's book, grow up. I'm not saying magic is real, but I do believe I ended up in the conservatory as a result of my own actions taken during the final phase of my graduate thesis. Oh, I am going to experience the wrath of Professor Morris and Dr. Jackson if I ever get back. My research and thesis notes should still be where I left them in my apartment on campus, but I don't know how much help that'll be. I had an undergrad helping me with this project. I wonder if he suspects anything. Do they all think I finally lost it? Maybe I have. Perhaps this is a psychotic break and I'm just actually lost in the Field Museum, exactly like when I was a kid. Maybe this place is finally starting to get to me. End supplemental. Extra supplemental. I was bitten by one of the mosquito bats on my way to the courtyard after I finished this last recording. This is the first time something has actually been hostile towards me. Thank you for listening to the Conservatory's audio catalog. This program is written, performed, and produced by Sydney Jane. You can find out more on our website at theconservepod.com. That's where all the social media links are. If you'd like to donate to the Conservatory to get some behind-the-scenes content and early access to episodes as the show is produced, you can do so by searching for the Conservatory Podcast on Patreon. I'd like to give a special thank you to the generous members of the donor tier, like Carrie, Zach, and Kale, lover of cilantro. One of the best ways to support the show is to tell your friends. Spread the word about this strange new facility and the wonders it holds within. Thanks!